This is Educating Technology, a podcast about using technology in our schools. Last time, we shared some of our favorite technology of 2018 and talked about what we look forward to in 2019. This week, we're back from the holiday break, a week later than expected, and we have some AMD news out of CES, as well as a rivalry between Verizon and Remind. If you like what we're doing, you can support us by going to patreon.com/educatingtech and becoming a patron. Now, on with the show. All right, so it's been, what, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, been a month? I don't know. We left out right before Christmas, and then we had a couple weeks off, and then we were going to come back, but we were actually in the process of moving last week, and so we are actually back in some of our buildings that were remodeled.
You are always moving.
It does seem that way. It does seem like I'm always moving, so. But we're getting there. There's a light at the end of the tunnel, so that's always good.
Well, that's very good. So how's your fiber project been coming then?
Well, the fiber project went on a little bit longer than what was intended, but it's done. And I have...
longer than intended?
Longer than intended. We discovered some things that were like, what the heck? And then we got those corrected, and then some other things happened by accident. And so, but that all got fixed too. And now I have single mode fiber running between my campuses. I have 10 gig connectivity between campuses, and I would have 10 gig all the way through, but I'm still got some 1 gig switches at the ends of these fiber runs, but everything is looking promising for the future of my backbone.
That's fantastic. I mean, once you start having 10 gig everywhere, think amazingly run faster. Who would have thought?
Yeah, and it's the fiber will actually handle more than 10 gigs, so I'm future-proofing a little bit down the line. I think it'll go up to like 100. Who knows? Maybe more.
Oh, if it's single mode, theoretical limitless.
Yeah. So that's good to go, and I'm excited about that. Had a little bit of a crisis, which you helped me out of. Needed some modules for Quick, and some nice $17 numbers off of Amazon have been troopers. I love them.
Dude, if you have not listening, anybody listening, if you have not given 10G Tech a chance on TwinAx cables or modules, definitely do it. They're going to be compatible without having to enter the unsupported command, and they work. And they're so cheap.
Yes, very cheap. And I got them in place, and they're working great. And in fact, you know, we had some trouble with our ISP the past few days. And the people that let me know about it first were like the admin building where I have some of these cheap modules in place. And so the first thing that pops in my head was, oh, geez,
like, oh, no.
Are my modules failing? But that's okay because I bought spares because they're so cheap you can
like,
buy extra.
I bought like a 10-pack of them for like $1.50.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I got spares, so it's okay. But it ended up not being the modules, and so they're just being troopers. But yeah, we noticed it like the run going to the elementary for some reason got pulled into the field house. And there's a splice point in there, and then it goes out of the, it goes into the field house, splices, comes back out of the field house, and then goes to the elementary. And then in the process of finding the cable that went to the elementary, the one to the actual field house actually got cut by accident. And so now there's a splice box in the middle of the field along with the pull point. So that was kind of fun. And then the first thing that happened day one, they slid the tray out and popped the fiber connections right out of the new fiber that I had ran for one of our portable buildings here at the high school. So
well, you know what? That is the one complaint that I have with the Unicam ends. Is they are not as secured as some of the other ends.
Yeah.
They are a lot quicker and a lot easier to do, but they are not as secured.
But it all got fixed. It all got taken care of. Everything's working. It's just that, you know, we have one job at this school. It's to keep the network up, you know? And when I go basically 2 weeks with the network down and it's like out of my control, it's like I'm getting a little antsy. It's like something's got to come up today. And
you start twitching.
Yeah, I just start twitching. And it just like very last day and just some things. But you know how contractors can be. They just do things on a different schedule than what sometimes we'd like them to be. And but it all got fine. It's all fine. It's like it just has to be up before Monday. That was the rule. Yeah. Has to be up and working.
I have a contractor coming out Monday to install a piece that went out in our old Valcom intercom system.
Mm-hmm.
That piece was ordered a month ago. So, yeah. time scales. Wildly different.
Yes. And sometimes I just don't like being at the mercy of other people. But, you know, I told my boss, it's like, you know what? Maybe we should invest tens of thousands of dollars into the equipment to terminate fiber and we'll just learn how to do it ourselves.
I can get it to you for less than $400.
But it's almost like it's cheaper just to pay somebody to do it, you know?
No, $400. $400.
$400. But yeah, so other than that, you have a little project of your own that you have going on. You have converted some of your you're doing something weird. So why don't you just go ahead?
It's not weird. It's just it's something that's been around for a while, but I'm repurposing it for another solution. So at the beginning of this year, I made the conversion on my machine at the house to Linux, and that's what I'm going to keep on it. I'm going to run Linux on it because, you know, I like to eat my own dog food, as I say, when I tout something.
Well, when I first met you, that's what you were running. I mean, you just ran Linux.
I've always been a Linux user. In fact, in the past, I was the ambassador for the Fedora project in Texas and did Linux user groups and things like that. So I've always been really heavily invested in Linux. I mean, heck, I run lots of server stuff that are Linux and whatnot. I love it. It's great. But I'm also a gamer. And we know how that goes on Linux. It doesn't.
Yeah.
It's
almost like macOS.
Yeah, Steam says there's like 1,800 games that run on Linux. I think about 1,700 of them must be the same one relisted over and over.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's not a bunch. And Wine, which stands for Wine is not an emulator, and it really isn't an emulator, doesn't really work that well. But so what I've been doing is I'm running a KDE Neon, which is basically Ubuntu 18.04 long-term support with the latest and greatest always of the KDE desktop environment, which is a Qt-based desktop. It's pretty. Very customizable. You can do whatever you want with it. But going to the Neon route, you get the bleeding edge features of it always, which it's fun because why else are you in Linux but bleeding edge? And I've got KVM, which is kernel-based virtual machines, running on it, doing emulation. But where things start getting fun is Ryzen and most modern processors, they support a feature called IOMMU, which is... For a quick way to understand it, is the ability to pass through directly PCI devices into virtual machines. So they're not being virtualized. They're being accessed directly as if there was like a whole nother motherboard and stuff in there. There's no kind of translation process.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
That is kind of neat.
So,
That you can have dedicated resources for certain things.
Dedicated anything. You can do dedicated NICs. You can do dedicated GPUs as I'm doing. You can do dedicated any kind of PCI card as long as you pass in the entire IOMMU group at a time, it'll work. So, like, I'm doing the GPU because I want to do gaming. And so in that IOMMU group is the GPU and the audio interface that's on the HDMI of that GPU. So two devices. So install Windows in a VM and literally go install the real video drivers for the GPU because it is presenting over PCI bus to the virtual machine.
That's awesome. That's the way to do it.
Super cool.
And games play no problems in a virtual machine?
Oh, there is maybe a 3-4% penalty in performance. But here's where the magic happens. So, you know, you've ran it in the past, VDI.
Yes.
How fast was your screen?
It was usable, but it wasn't that
great. So how fast was full screen video?
It stuttered. It wasn't the best in the world.
Well, so there's this other piece of technology, KFR, I think is what it's called, but it's basically KVM video, KVF or something. I don't know the acronyms, but it's basically you're copying the frame buffer off of the GPU that you have in the virtual machine into a shared memory space that the host can access. And this is from a project called Looking Glass. And what it lets you do is see the output from that GPU in real time without any latency on the host machine.
Well, that's good. That takes care of that problem.
Really, incredible. Now, in this situation, it's awesome. Now, of course, I could just plug in a monitor into that GPU and it would function just like it normally would. It would have that virtual machine running on that GPU because it is physically located within that GPU. But what Project Looking Glass lets you do is have that video memory shared. So you don't have to have a second monitor, and you literally just fire up your VM, fire up the Looking Glass client, bam, you got a full screen instance running at whatever resolution you decide to tell it at full speed. I mean, there is less than a 2 millisecond latency in it. It's faster than most LCD monitors.
That's pretty good.
Which is incredible. And it has been so much fun to play with because it's not just that, yeah, I get to play games. But no, you get to learn this whole other aspect side of high performance virtualization, which is really useful. So let's say you had a network where you needed InfiniBand support. You could actually pass in directly an InfiniBand NIC into your virtual machine and have zero performance. Same wise with a real 10 gig NIC. Let's say you didn't want to do sharing of NICs. Well, give it real ones. You could do the same thing and have astounding performance over the network.
You know, great. I thought about something like that similar. When I was playing around with that Homebridge stuff for the HomeKit to add my Vizio TVs in the cafeteria to see if I can connect them to HomeKit, I was just kind of goofing around with it. I needed the Homebridge server to actually be on the same network as the TVs, which is a wireless network, which is basically just a VLAN. And so I was thinking, it's like, well, how can I do this in my virtual environment? And doing what you're saying is like, you could do that. You could specifically assign an actual physical port to a virtual machine, and then you just plug that port into a switch and assign that switch to the VM, and you're good to go.
Well, I mean, it's even beyond just assigning the port. There's no virtual switches involved. The hardware doesn't even appear to the guest. I mean, to the host. It only appears in the guest as physical hardware.
Well, that's...
It's like going back to physical machines.
Oh. This is the best way to do things physically.
I mean, it's crazy. You get the snapshotting ability, the cloning, you get all the deployability of virtual machines, but then you can get the super high performance of physical machines. It's cool.
That's amazing, but it's great.
Love it.
Yeah.
Now I can play Wildlands all I want in Linux.
There you go. That works. You couldn't just do it in Wine? Isn't that a thing?
Yeah, Wine sucks.
All right, so.
But to their credit, there is a new project. It's called DXVK, where they're going to turn DirectX 12 instructions into Vulkan, which is awesome. But that's for another day.
Well, speaking of DirectX, that's a good way to, I guess, transition to talk about. Obviously, CES is going on right now, which is usually 95% crap that will never come out. And then there's usually a small function of stuff that is actually comes. It's good. Other than if you go to CES, you come back with like a disease. It seems like it's like a real bad cold runs rampant after CES. But your favorite company was apparently at AMD was at CES, and they announced some things. And I just figured I'd give you your This Week in AMD segment.
This Week in AMD.
So you could talk about what happened at the CES conference.
No, it's actually they gave us a nice teaser of the Zen 2 architecture, which is going to be in the Ryzen 3000 products. And let's say 9900K, which is Intel's fastest consumer CPU, which is 8 cores, 16 threads, whatnot. The i9-9900K, it's a very expensive CPU. We're talking like $700, I believe. Well, AMD showed off their new Zen 2 Ryzen 3000 chip that was right on the... as far as all the rumors are about a chiplet design, it does have an I/O die along with the CCXs for computing. And they only had a single CCX on this thing with the I/O die. And it was actually beating the 9900K in a Cinebench score, which is pretty impressive because the 9900K is a beast of a processor. But it was actually doing it with less power as well. And I don't know if I'll have to send you a screenshot to post in the notes of this, but the CPU that they were doing it on, they showed it, and it was kind of like they were jabbing Intel in the eye about, hey, look, we have room for a whole other CCX on this chip, and we're already beating you. So it looks like those rumors I had talked about earlier from Adored TV where they were going to have 16-core variants of AM4 processors are true. So it seems like they were actually beating Intel's highest-end chip with one of their low-end chips now, which is awesome for the consumer because cheap things with good performance. We love it. But they did do a release of one new product, Radeon 7, which, yeah, I know they're proud of their 7-nanometer process, which is why they called it that. But it's actually Vega 2, you know, V2.
Yeah.
So, hey, 7. Yeah. Don't really agree with that, but whatever. It's pretty cool. I mean, about as fast as a 2080, RTX 2080, without the ray tracing stuff. A little cheaper. Yeah, it is what it is. It's cool. And, yeah, they said that they're going to release Navi at the end of this year, but they didn't give us any real specs of that. But we've talked about that before, the Navi stuff. Yeah. But it was exciting to see them actually showing off Zen 2 for Ryzen 3000, which is, they've really got to work on that.
Yes.
Zen 2, Ryzen 3000. But, yeah, so we're going to get some awesome chips, and it looks like we're going to be able to have a 16-core variant for our traditional desktops that we buy. And oh, they also released the new 3000 mobile chips and some Chromebooks powered by AMD, which is pretty exciting because that really hadn't happened yet.
Yeah, one of our links for the show notes is that HP launches the first ever AMD Chromebook, so that's kind of it's kind of interesting.
It's cool. I mean, they're using the older chips from their Bulldozer architecture, but they're still faster than the Celerons. And they have such a better GPU that things like video and whatnot are going to run so much better on them.
I wonder if that'll actually drive the price of Chromebooks down a little bit, being it's AMD. If it doesn't cost
more competition.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, I've got three broken ones on my desk that I just fixed. So, I mean,
hey, I got one on my desk right now.
Well, I got
warning to everyone. Lenovo 100E keyboards are failing.
Yeah, no kidding. I've sent at least five or six of them off. And then I just sent off two today to get, it's like, and it's not, keys are not falling off. The keys just stop working, and it's just crazy. But yeah, I've got three on my desk that I just fixed, and then I'm not talking about the seven that I have on my shelf that are actually broken. So
never mind the seven.
It's like I was telling you the other day, or yesterday actually, it's like, you know, I'm starting to wonder if these Chromebooks are actually worth it, you know? I told you, it's like, I want to see concrete data that they're actually improving something. And you made the statement to me, which is like totally, totally true, that if it's just being used as a typewriter, it's not really improving anything. You know, you're not really seeing a complete benefit. And so to me, I wonder, it's like, is that really all of our teachers are doing? It's just, we're just typing papers. It's just a convenience to let them type their papers in class as opposed to after school at home. And it's like, I could do that on an iPad and the keyboards won't fail, you know,
but when they do, they'll be like 20 times expensive.
Yeah, I know. In some ways it's like, I'd rather just deal with iPads. I wish Apple made an iOS device in laptop form, for a reasonable price. And just, I don't even care if they did the keyboard, like the smart keyboard where it's like covered in that, thing.
I could tell.
Yeah, where it's not like the cloth, but it's kind of like a vinyl, I guess, in a way, to me, is what it feels like.
Yeah.
The keys are not going to fall off of that because, like, the whole thing is just sort of encased. But, I mean, it's just like, but it's got to be reasonably priced. You know, it's got to hit that $200 price point to compare with the Chromebook, and they're not ever going to do that.
I mean, we can't even, we know they're not going to do it. I mean, their cheapest iPad is, what, $249, and it's garbage?
It's not garbage. It's actually a pretty decent iPad. It's got pencil support.
Well, it does have an Apple logo on there, so it's already in garbage territory for me.
Hey, now, easy. I like the new. I just set up 35 of them, and I like them. So.
Yeah, but the problem with it, though, let's say you wanted to do the keyboard and those kind of things, how much is it after you get those accessories?
Yeah, and it's like the Apple doesn't even make a like a keyboard for the iPad. It's like you'd have to use a third party, and which means it'll be
that
Bluetooth.
That Logitech one that has the hole you set it in?
Oh, yeah. It's ridiculous. So, I mean, there is a company that makes a really, really nice Bluetooth keyboard for the iPad. And they only make it for the iPad Pro. But it's the Bridge keyboard, B-R-Y-D-G-E, I think. It looks like it turns the iPad It makes it the iPad look like a laptop. I mean, it just it's seamless. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful keyboard.
I'm about to bring back some bad memories for you. You remember when we were both at the service center and we had all those Bluetooth keyboards?
Yes.
Is that going to be the same scenario you end up with, though?
Probably.
My goodness. Repair.
Yeah,
repair.
It's ridiculous. And see, and that's what I like about the smart connector on the side of the iPad Pro, because I have the Apple keyboard on mine. I went with all the Apple stuff, of course, because that's me. And I didn't really want to deal with the Bluetooth. The only thing I miss is like the backlit. It doesn't have backlit.
Which seems like they'd be able to do that more because they push power to it.
But, yeah, but I know some people have problems with the smart connector failing after a while. And so I don't even know if that's a legit, solution. And a lightning keyboard is not a solution. That is just going to look tacky. And so,
well, and it's not going to be supported in the next version anyway, cause it's going to go USB-C.
Yeah, probably. I'll consent to that at this point. With the new iPad Pros having USB-C, I think it's coming all around. But it's like Apple needs to make an iOS laptop, really, truly. I mean, maybe with a different keyboard than what they're using in the MacBooks and the MacBook Pros. But
you don't want the butterfly?
The butterflies. But it's like I'd almost rather deal with Apple hardware instead of – it's almost like I want Chrome OS on Apple hardware, and I think I would be happy. You know,
I will take Chrome OS on any kind of better hardware. I'm fine with Lenovo, but let's spend $10 and make the keyboard better.
I know. It's like you told me earlier, it's like, how hard is a keyboard?
It's not hard. I have had laptops that are 20 years old and the keyboards don't fail. I mean, come on, guys.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a keyboard.
It's like they're cutting like some corners that they don't need to cut.
Every corner.
But yeah, so that's so all that to say, AMD has Chromebook is in Chromebooks now. So that's that's pretty good. But before we get to some other things. There's one topic that I really want to talk about that just happened like in the past few days, which is like incredibly mind blowing that it's actually happening. We do want to mention that Windows 7 support is coming up probably next year. I don't know.
January 14th.
I don't know if the option to pay to keep going is going to be there, but I know that it's going to be unreasonably expensive to be able to do that. And then,
but it is there.
Yes. And if you really want that, which God help you. And then there's also something interesting that came out about Windows 10 that I kind of like in a way and kind of don't like in other ways. It's kind of like bittersweet, I guess. But Windows 10 is going to start now. It's going to feel a little bloated because it is, but it's going to start reserving the extra space that it's going to need to be able to do its own updates. And so you shouldn't run into the free space needed option to be able to do Windows 10 feature updates, because it's going to allocate that space for it automatically. And so basically it's just going to white out some space, and it looks like it's going to be like 8 to 10 gigs bigger than what it normally is.
I thought it was 7.
Well, yeah, either way.
But I like this. Memory is cheap. Maybe this will prevent people from making a Windows 10 device that has 32 gig of storage.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because that is a crime.
But
yeah, I like this. I mean, it's yes, for us power users that would be capable of managing it, yeah, we'd like to be able to control our own space. But for the vast majority of people, it's going to be a good move.
I mean, for me, I want the hard drive space. I can make sure that I have 10 gigs free on myself. But like you said, for the teachers and for the mass consumers, it's going to be good. So that means they're never out of space, as long as it clears itself out at the end when it's done. So it's got to have that built into it, too. You can't have windows.old.old.
You don't want like 3.olds?
No, we don't need .old1, .old2, .old3. It's got to be able to clear itself out.
It better do that.
Yeah, and so there's that. Tell us a little bit about what Microsoft is doing with GitHub now.
Hey, the one thing that I always wanted out of GitHub, they're giving us now. Unlimited private repositories, which is cool because GitHub is a...
For the free tier, for the free plan.
For free. Yeah, for free. And I think they were doing this because GitLab started doing it when Microsoft bought GitHub. But I don't care why they're doing it. I really do like GitHub. But yeah, so a lot of people like to use GitHub to store their projects. Heck, some people use it to store documentations and websites.
Twistofmat.com is actually hosted on GitHub Pages.
Yeah, it's a good platform. I mean, Git is a fantastic protocol for revisioning and syncing and things like that. So it's cool to have a little nod to the community. Hey, we know you don't want everything public. You might be working on something that's not ready for someone to see. We'll give you unlimited privates.
Yeah, but the thing, it's like, I was kind of looking into it because it's like, well, maybe I said I would kind of like my website code. Not that there's anything there. It's literally just a big white M on a black screen with a Twitter link. That's really all it is. So it's nothing like I want to hide, but it's like, say I wanted to host on GitHub Pages, but I don't want people to see my code. But unfortunately, if you're using GitHub Pages, it has to be a public repository. You can't use a private repository and...
Which makes sense because public's viewing the page.
Yeah, exactly. But speaking of people using GitHub for different things, there's actually a Apple-based blog that I actually read sometimes, and they actually do their articles. They plan and write their articles in GitHub to keep up with the revisions and stuff like that too. So it's more than just programming. I mean, they use Markdown, the Markdown language to do it, and so it is kind of code in a way. But they use GitHub to actually do their revisioning on their, when they do like their edits and things like that, they use GitHub to keep up with all that stuff. So,
which is cool because Git actually was written and created by the same gentleman who created Linux, Linus Torvalds. He created the Git protocol, and he did that so other people could work on the Linux code and not have to worry about stable online connectivity. That was its whole purpose. So people could work offline and come back later and changes would sync appropriately.
Yeah.
And it's done really well at that. And every instance where it's been implemented, it just works.
I do like GitHub. I mean, I'm not using it to its full potential at all. But I mean, I'm hosting a static HTML page, but it's great. I mean, and even if you just wanted to do that, it's got the free, it uses Let's Encrypt, gives you an SSL for free. You just click a little box if you do the custom domain. It's really easy to point your domain to it. GitHub Pages is great. And they also have this blogging thing called Jekyll that I just can't seem to figure out a whole lot because I don't know anything about Ruby.
Yeah, Ruby's evil.
It's a little bit complicated to try to figure out. But for now, it's just running on GitHub Pages, and it's just a static page, which essentially I just want it to be kind of like a landing page for people to find me. You know, I don't really want a blog, but I want to have something that's like, hey, you want to know everything that I'm up to or what I do? You can go to this page, and there's links to everything that I do. I just haven't got around to actually building it yet. So
you're busy.
Yeah. So what about Ubiquity is happening since you're going to be going towards Ubiquity as far as your network infrastructure?
Well, and this is actually not even part of the branch that I'm going to be moving to. This is part of their EdgeMax line. I was just wanting to let people know that they released stable version 2, which is really cool in the fact that they have updated the Debian base from Stretch to Wheezy. So it's in the next version of Debian. So they're in the long-term support version of Debian that's going to be around for a while. So third-party packages you might want to load in there. Let's say you wanted to load Snort in there and do your own kind of thing. You wanted to load a package in there like Dan's Guardian to where you could do internet filtering with that. Now you can and not have to worry about it breaking everything.
Well, that's good. So the thing...
Still unsupported, but yeah. It won't at least tear it up.
Always. Everything we do is unsupported at this point. So the thing that I wanted to talk about today, which is totally education. I mean, it really is education-based.
It absolutely is.
And it's kind of... It's funny in a way, and I can kind of see both sides of this. But there is a service that teachers use to communicate with students and parents called Remind. It used to be called Remind 101. Basically, it's just a text messaging service. Students join a class by texting a code to a certain address, and they show up under the teacher's Remind. The teacher doesn't get the phone number of the student. The only person that has that is actually the Remind service, and it's just to forward the messages that the teacher sends out. So the teacher doesn't get any email addresses or text messages. It will work over email too, I think, but they don't get the phone numbers. The students don't get the teacher's phone numbers. Same vice versa for parents. Parents can join up to this service too and get the same messages sent out. And it's also a way that they can communicate with each other, obviously, without needing phone numbers. And so it's a very, very good service. There's a free tier that works great that just about our teachers and staff are pretty much encouraged to use it because it's just that good. But it goes over SMS, and SMS costs money. And it looks like Verizon is now going to be charging a spam fee to Remind 101 to be able to send and receive these messages on Verizon customers. And I get it. I wonder if this is because of, I don't want to say the dreaded word of net neutrality, because it's their network and it's now has to treat this a little bit different. And I'm wondering if we would see this if net neutrality rules were still in effect like they were.
Well, and here's some food for thought. SMS doesn't go over data channels.
Yeah. And so it's
actually going over the telephone system part of Verizon. So it is not even susceptible to the net neutrality stuff because it is not an internet service.
Well, so I mean, you remember when you used to have to pay for your text messages? I mean, not everything was unlimited.
It's because it's completely different implementation of service.
And so I can kind of get why Verizon wants to charge Remind to send these messages, because it's sending millions and millions of messages probably every day that Verizon's having to handle. And for the most part, like, Remind's taking care of the fee, you know, in the background. I mean, they're paying customers or basically covering the fees needed to cover the free customers too.
Now, I don't know if you noticed it. I noticed it on our instance because my daughter's teacher uses Remind as well. And if you have the Remind app installed, it switched from using SMS into push notifications.
Yes. And so they've always done that. If you had the Remind app, and that's probably the only way that they're going to get around this, because Remind is not going to pay that spam fee to Verizon. And
honestly, I feel it's a better solution anyway.
Yeah, I like the app better anyway, because it's like you know who you're talking to and not some random number. You know, you can kind of see a person's name. You can see the class. It's a little bit easier to send them. But here's the thing. Not everybody has smartphones. You know, most people do have smartphones, but not everybody does.
That's just true.
And so how do you
But those that don't, how often are they texting?
Yeah, that's true. but it's like, this is kind of a major deal for Verizon to do this. And I'm wondering if they're just the first of many or the first of four that are going to do this.
Well, all of this could go away if everybody decided to support RCS.
And, you know, it's coming. I think it's going to happen. I think I saw an article the other day that Apple is thinking about supporting RCS in messages.
They should. Everybody should. And that could be our open standard that goes over data that wouldn't force these carriers to implement this antiquated version of messaging. Because, I mean, where SMS comes from is the old pager networks.
Oh, yeah. Good old pagers.
It's the same protocols.
It's like phone number 911. That means you got to call home quick. find a payphone.
It's ancient.
Yeah. But essentially RCS is basically open iMessage, right? Just messages that are going over data.
Rich communication service.
Yeah. And so, yeah, there's no reason why people shouldn't be able to support that. But then again, you run into the problem that how do you handle a non-smartphone that doesn't really have data access? How do they support
it? Well, they all have data access now because that's how they do activation.
Well, that's true. And so maybe it's like RCS just is free and comes with it and you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, because it's way cheaper for them to push it over data than it is the text messaging. I get it. It sucks, though, for those Remind customers,
you know,
because
you say that,
it's become necessary.
You say that it's cheaper to push it over data, but how come I get unlimited texts and phone calls, but I have to pay for data?
Because that's where the customer base wants it. It is cheaper for them to push data there.
Yeah, it's just they just push that. It's like, okay.
I mean, it's like, it's less than one packet per SMS message.
Yeah, and so it's just kind of funny. It's like it's cheaper for them to do data, but that's where they charge us more is for data.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, you remember when not a lot of people used data, we had unlimited data.
I know, when it was like,
and you got charged for text and calls.
Like $20 a month for unlimited data. And,
that was abused.
Yeah, but it's like they're still got those old grandfather plans too. That people still hang on to those too. Those old iPhones.
They have like a 30-year-old phone on it.
Yeah. Well, no, it's like it's somehow those new phones like still work on it, or somehow they just don't change the plan. They just change the phone. I mean, when you bring an unlocked phone to a network, I mean, what can you do? You may be stuck at 3G speeds, but you get your
unlimited.
You get your unlimited data. And AT&T 3G is really not that bad. Now, Verizon 3G was bad. I mean,
yeah, HSPA was actually nice.
And then there was like fake 4G, which was basically HSPA Plus, which is still 3G, but mm-hmm. it was fake 4G.
And it was really good.
It was great. I mean, I thought that was all I ever needed was just the HSPA
now,
Plus.
I do not agree with AT&T and putting a 5G logo on devices.
No, you know, they did the same thing with HSPA Plus. They put 4G on there. I mean, it's the same thing that they've always done. Same thing.
And I think people have forgotten they did this in the past.
But are they putting it on the phones that have like the 4x4 MIMO LTE chip in them where they can have faster data speeds so it actually makes it seem
like
it's
faster?
Oh,
yeah, but it's still not 5G.
Well, I know.
It's just bonded 4G.
But see, that's like the iPhone XS can technically, it has a 4x4 chip in it, but the iPhone XR only has a 2x2. And so the iPhone XS will actually get faster LTE speeds. And dude, let me...
Hey, that's kind of like the screens. The XR has like half the resolution.
Yeah, but it's still... Hey, look, my wife's got... I bought my wife one. It's still a pretty gorgeous phone.
I'm just...
You really can't tell the difference unless you're like staring close at it. But...
So, do we even need that kind of resolution?
No, there? Not at all. But here's the thing. Okay. Here's what I do want to mention about this this speed. It could be because the speedtest.net was connected to an AT&T server over AT&T LTE, but my iPhone XS pulled over 150 megabytes down over LTE.
Nice.
Now, they could be, I mean, being it was connected to an AT&T server, they may could be doing some trickery and making it seem faster than what it actually is.
It actually responds from the tower versus...
Yeah, I mean, so there's no guarantees, but I just, like, think that that was pretty, it's like, I'm getting faster LTE speeds on my phone.
Let's do it live. I got one bar of Verizon in my office. Let's see what it does.
Maybe 3 megs is what I'm guessing.
Oh, I would be shocked if I got that. And especially since I have a single connection.
Yeah. I mean, it's,
come on.
It's like you got a low bar on an oversubscribed network. It's crazy.
Let's see what it does. Yeah, just what you would expect.
3.
Yeah.
It's funny. But yeah, but it's just amazing how fast. But, you know, Verizon's problem is they're oversubscribed. And so... But that's what. But you can get Apple Music now for free, apparently, on some unlimited data plans. Be curious as to how that works. Well, no, because y'all aren't really doing. I wonder
government plan.
Yeah, I wonder how that would work on that. I don't know.
Not on there.
Not on there. Be nice if it was though, wouldn't it? It's like, hey, sign up for Verizon and you get free Apple Music or Spotify.
I wonder if I could trade it in for a further discount.
It's like, what if I don't want Apple Music or an iPhone? Can I get a cheaper phone?
Exactly.
So yeah, so it's 2019, dude. We're in a new year. And we're a week late on a show. but yeah, so I guess that's it, man. Was your holiday good? Did you have a good holiday? Did you have a good break?
It was. I was not ready to go back. What about yourself?
Well, considering I spent half of it up here already, mine didn't seem like it was long enough either. I was off for, I think, New Year's Day. I came back the 2nd. I came here, I think, the 27th and the 28th. I was here. Yeah. I was here for 5 days out of the 10 that we were off. So I was here for half the time. It was just broke up with New Year's in between. Between them. But yeah, we had a good Christmas, had a good New Year's. Was really missing those extra 5 days off come the end of it, because we pretty much just hit the ground running with this moving after the construction. It was like, is the floor going to come in? Is the floor not going to come in? The floor's not coming in. Well, the floor showed up. So it's like everything was just kind of crazy up in the air for a couple weeks. And so, but we got that done. They started the next section of the elementary. Now, they still have some things that they need to do. Like there's a floor in the hallway that needs to be put in. Some cabinets hadn't shown up yet, but everybody's pretty much in there usable. I think the plan is we were told to take down smart boards and projectors. I think the plan is we're putting interactive displays in all those rooms. No idea when those are coming. And so we're having to have whiteboards moved because they were put up in the wrong place in all the classrooms. We need to split some 2 whiteboards to make room for the display to go in the middle of the room. And so I think for the time being, we're going to do projectors on carts pointing at a whiteboard for the time being.
Dude, I totally like interactive panels on carts.
I thought about it and we talked about it, but the problem is, I mean, if you walk in these classrooms, there's no room for it. There literally is zero room for those people to. There's barely any room for the kids, dude.
What in the world do they have in
there?
Well,
the thing is, it's like they had everything in their classroom. They had all their stuff, all their manipulatives, their teaching materials, all this stuff. And then we flooded. And so then they got moved to a temporary classroom, and they were only told to take like 6 weeks worth of stuff. And so they left all the other stuff in the classroom. So you basically have a full classroom worth of stuff. Well, then the donations started rolling in. And so now they basically got a whole nother classroom worth of stuff donated. And so now they have basically two classrooms worth of stuff that they're having to deal with. And then in their temporary classroom, everybody needed shelves and storage. And so they bought these shelves and these cabinets. And so those have to be put somewhere, even though that they put new built-ins in everywhere. And so they got double the storage that they had before. And it's just crazy. And the classrooms look real nice. Don't get me wrong. It's really funny is they put those auto flushers on the toilets. And stuff. And so there's one classroom, since all elementary classrooms have to have bathrooms in them. Apparently that's a thing, which is new to me. I didn't know. I went to school, we didn't have bathrooms in our elementary classrooms, but
there was an elementary I went to, they didn't have bathrooms in the building.
That's interesting. But so this one classroom, you open the door to the in-classroom bathroom and the toilet flushes. It's because the sensor's a little bit too high.
I love
so
it.
It's kind of funny.
It just makes sure it's clean before you get there. Yeah,
it's like you just open the door, it flushes. And so it's kind of funny. I took Doug down there and I was like, hey, let me show you this. For the door, he just started laughing. It was funny. But yeah, but things are moving along. Some holes have to be patched from where there were some smart boards hanging up that aren't now. And but it's gonna come together. It's gonna be real nice. Tile on the wall on the outside in the hallway. They're throwing a fit about their backpack hooks out there, so I don't know what's gonna end up about that. Right now the backpacks are just sitting on the floor. Because apparently there's no room in the classroom for the backpacks. I mean, because there's just no room anywhere for anything. And so But some teachers have thrown a lot of stuff away, and some people just kept everything. So to me, I'm like, because we had this old gym with a bunch of stuff stored in it. It's like, y'all haven't used this stuff in a year and a half. Just throw it all away.
Do you need it?
I know. At that point, you just don't need it. Go through it. Get the stuff you have to keep that was for like curriculum-based stuff. And then just get rid of everything else. I mean, literally, there was this one lady. She had in this box a bag of dirt. A literal bag of
a bag of dirt.
A bag of dirt. A Ziploc.
You know, I know where there is some of that. I mean,
a Ziploc bag of dirt was in this box and she kept it.
Well, that's what we use. So special about the dirt?
That's what we use when we grow our little bean plants. We'll just go get some more dirt.
I mean, it's dirt.
I mean, she kept the dirt.
There's an expression, cheaper than dirt.
Yeah, so that's kind of what's going on. That's why I can't really do screens on carts because I would love to, but
you really need them out of the way on the wall.
Yes. And another issue is the computer's in the back, the screen needs to be in the front. And so we're kind of
well, the thing about a cart though is you don't have to go through the ceiling for cable.
No, that's true, but you have to go through the ceiling to hook the network cable up to the computer.
Nah, wireless.
Well, no.
Oh, come on.
No, because that requires me to either put something wireless in these desktops or get them laptops, neither of which I want to do. So
I think you should get them Surface Books. I know how much you love them.
And that's our show for this week.
Well, next week I want to talk about a project that is actually going to come to a close. I'm excited to talk about it because we saved so much money, but I'll save it for next week.
There you go.
So stay tuned.
But educatingtech.net/59 for links and show notes. Educating.net if you also want to see links to our past episodes. We're going to be episode 60 next week. Hey, pretty soon we're going to be at episode 100. I don't know what we're going to do. But yeah, 40 episodes, like 40 weeks away. But so sometime next year probably we'll be on episode
100. That's pretty 100. Soon,
yeah.
Right?
Next year. But yeah, so you can send us any questions or comments or concerns to educatingtech@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us on Twitter at educatingtech. Don't forget, you can reach the hashtag AskEducatingTech if you want to ask us questions. We'll read it out on the show. If you like what we're doing, you could support us by going to patreon.com/educatingtech. And since some Patreon's doing some crazy things, I don't know if that's going to be around much longer. Don't really know how I feel about that. But also, if you don't mind, leave us a rating or review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. And remember, leave us a 5-star review. I'll read out whatever you put in the review.
Whatever
it is, whether you leave a instructions on how to make brownies or something, I'll read that out. It doesn't matter. Just leave us a 5-star review.
I think that would be a lot of fun, actually.
Yeah. but that's it.
Can I leave a review?
No. We'll see you next week. See you later, Chris.
See you later, Matt.